Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey friends, welcome to another edition of the Tennis and Bagels podcast. This is your host, Vunch. And joining me on my left here is a very familiar guest who we had on last time I did this, which was a ladies singles Wimbledon preview. And to have him back on to do this post-Wimbledon is certainly nice since we get to go full circle. So David, how are you?
First off, thank you so much for having me. Besides like the almost 3-hour loss in tennis I was telling you about that I had today, I'm doing well. I will say, I feel like the women's tournament overall was great. The final was just a bit of a dud, but I felt like the semifinals, the quarterfinals, I felt like they were really fun stuff.
Yeah, I kind of echo that as well. It just kind of ended on a bit of an anticlimactic way, let's just say, and that's not taking anything away from the eventual winner, Markéta von Drusova, who coming into this grass season was 2-10 on grass lifetime, and of course picked up a couple of wins in Berlin, and then goes through the field here, and you could kind of maybe see that, okay, she can make a deep run. Her game should translate well on the grass, especially after she beat Donna Vekic and Kudermetova in rounds 2 and 3. That's when you thought, okay, she's in the open section of the draw. She's in that quarter with Jessica Pegula. And, if Swiatek loses or something crazy happens, you could certainly have seen a path for this to occur. But just the way it kind of went down with Jabeur, for example, beating 4 major champions in a row to get to the final, and he's really kind of solidifying herself as one of the best grass court players of this decade. And then you obviously had the Svitolina story, but no one was talking about von Drusova coming in and winning this tournament. She seemed kind of like an afterthought, even though she won the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to set talk for everyone, but when I think of von Drusova, I thought about, French Open final, slow surfaces, using that lefty forehand to just drag opponents around the court, excellent fitness, stuff that doesn't necessarily, the long elongated windup on the forehand. Stuff that doesn't necessarily contribute or doesn't necessarily translate, in at least in my mind, to grass court success. But I saw that because I had thought that Kudermetova had a chance to win the whole thing. And so when I saw how easily she dispatched her in the second round, I was like, wait a second. Yeah, Markéta, and I watched some of the match, and Markéta just really, Veronica found it so difficult to hit through Markéta from the baseline. And I was just really impressed with how well that von Drusova absorbed pace, which was also a big factor when she beat, you mentioned it too, Donna Vekic. Just the fact that she was just totally able to defuse Vekic's power. Now, sure, there was a scheduling component to that loss with Vekic, yeah, with the first week rain delay, having to play a lot of tennis in a short period of time. But take nothing away from von Drusova. That was another really impressive win. And so while I think that, by far, you mentioned the 4 major champions that Jabeur beat, the fact is, I think that Jabeur had the much tougher road, but I also don't think that von Drusova had an easy road, having to beat Kudermetova, Vekic, Buzkova, who went to the quarterfinals last year,
yeah,
Pegula, and then Svitolina played a bad match, but she was playing great coming into the match. I'm really impressed. Do I necessarily think that she'll ever win another grass tournament? No, but am I impressed that she put it together for 7 straight matches and won in straight sets in 5 of the 7, including the semifinals and the finals. And not to mention, I'm sorry for like going on for so long, but going back to the Pula match, she was 1-4 breakpoint down in the third set. That's serious mental perseverance.
You're reading my mind, because that's exactly where I was going to go next. You know, because for Pegula, for example, you know, this was her 6th quarterfinal.
Yeah.
At a major. And, yeah, I think it was her 6th. And she was, that's right, because she lost twice to Iga, once to Barty.
And then Brady.
To Brady, yeah.
Yeah. Or no, in the quarters, she lost to Brady in the Australian Open.
So her 6th quarterfinal, and I'm thinking, and she also lost to Azarenka, right, this year. But, you know, I'm thinking, I thought she definitely had it at 4-1 break point. She misses this backhand, it goes long. But then the tennis that Vondrousova played after that was spectacular. That 2-4 game, I distinctly remember her, like, hitting this glorious slice approach, coming in, finishing an overhand behind it, like, playing really strong returns. And sure, Pegula probably was feeling a little bit of the pressure and didn't always play her best tennis, but I don't think her level actually dropped a whole lot. I think it just kind of maintained even throughout the whole time. It was Vondrousova who really... I think it helped that the roof closed at 3-1. That was certainly... Yeah. It's Vondrousova won a lot of matches under the roof this fortnight, and I think it actually helped her serve. The slower conditions, maybe it just kind of... It just kind of ruined the momentum a little bit for Pegula. But I just felt like Vondrousova was the stronger, the braver, and more courageous of the two at the very end. And that certainly paid off.
Yeah, I mean, what I noticed was through much of the first two sets, Vondrousova's forehand in that match was horrendous. She was spraying balls. Pegula was able to rush her. But by the end, she was firing on all cylinders from the forehand wing. And that's really what I also noticed in the Svitolina match and the Jabeur match was, if you had seen the first two sets of the Vondrousova match, you would totally understand why she was so poor on grass coming into it. But she just found a way to just steady that wing. She didn't spray error. She didn't allow opponents to rush her. And that was most apparent towards the end of that Pegula match, where she just caught fire. And I really thought that, you know, but Pegula, I didn't think played a bad match at all.
Yeah.
She could have been better for sure. I don't think grass is her best surface. But I think that I thought that it was more, as you stated, Vondrousova raising her level at the end and like some sort of epic choke.
Yes. Because, I mean, you look at the score, it's very easy to think it was an epic choke. But if you actually go back and watch the last 5 games on replay, you'll see that like Vondrousova really took it from her. And Pegula, I thought, was well in it at 4-all. And even she could have held in that game. And she hit 3 winners and it still wasn't enough to win the game. So I think... this is just like one of those cases where I think Pegula was really upset because obviously it was an opportunity miss. But
yeah,
I don't think she should have that many regrets. Like that's where I feel like Vondrousova really, like that was the match that kind of won her this tournament.
Yeah, I will say she probably, when she saw, I'm going to be honest with you. Given what we saw, and I know this is like hypothetical.
Yeah.
Okay, but bear with me. Given what we saw from Svitolina in the semifinals and in the bundle of nerves that was Jabeur in the final, Pegula, when Vondrousova won the title, had to have been thinking that should have been me.
Yeah. I had the same thought.
I think she would have won it. Based on hindsight, you know, on what we saw.
If everything else stays the same,
right.
Sure.
What do you think? Do you think she would have won it based on the level you saw from Svitolina and Jabeur?
Yeah, I think so. I just think Svitolina, for example, like obviously she had those amazing wins against Azarenka and Swiatek. And, you know, she was also playing for something greater. And obviously we know she's probably a better, more aggressive version of what she's ever been.
Yeah.
But when she played that semifinal, she just looked really exhausted physically, mentally, and I just felt she was not on her best game. And I think Pegula is the type of player that can take advantage of something like that. So I could have certainly seen her being a hypothetical Wimbledon champion now that you put it this way.
Absolutely. And the thing about, and you mentioned Svitolina, she played 2 really tough matches before that semifinal between Azarenka, you know, the deep in the third set, super tiebreak. And then you had, you know, the emotional energy going into that. It was physical and emotional for both matches of that Swiatek match. It was really sad to see how she fought so hard, and then it was just she was pressing a lot from the baseline. Her forehand was horrendous. And it was just sad to see because she fought so hard. But what a comeback. You know, she's won a clay WTA event. She looked pretty good at the French Open. She beat, she beat Trevi.
I think the match was impressive.
Absolutely.
Fourth round.
Yeah. And so she comes here to the grass. She loses a blowout to in Birmingham or something like that. She loses the blowout loss and she comes in with no expectations. And just like you said, rips off big win after big win, beating Venus. I know it doesn't seem like a big win, and it's, and in 2023, it might not be. But at the same time, it's Venus Williams at Wimbledon, right? There's a mental hurdle to get over there. And then to beat, Sofia Kenin, the Grand Slam champion, Azarenka, Swiatek. And Kenin, by the way, I don't know if we want to talk about that at all, but Kenin's win over Gauff was one of the best matches of the tournament, I thought.
100%, 100% agree. Like, that was some of the best stuff I've seen from her since winning getting to the finals of the French.
And it was just the mental toughness from both of them. And I really don't, I like to, if you followed my stuff over the years, listeners, y'all might know that I'm not the biggest Coco Gauff fan. I got to give her credit, though. I thought that I didn't think she played poorly at all. I think she would have beaten most of the draw. What did you think about Gauff's level?
Yeah, I felt as though in that first round match, I felt that Kenin played really, really smart tactically.
Yeah.
Particularly, it wasn't until late in the third set where I felt like Gauff's forehand actually broke down. I actually thought Gauff did very well, for example, to win the second set. Just mustered all of her defense and her grit. And the forehand actually was holding up well enough to get her backhand in play. And she was actually, she really made a match out of it when it could have gone straight sets for Kenin. And so it was one of those where it was like, you had a revitalized performance from a former major champion against a top player who had some expectations on her, but it was like, it wasn't until I thought the match was pretty high quality until the very end, where then you really saw Gauff having to really press on that forehand wing, and we saw some of those same issues again. But my takeaway was that was Kenin's level coming on.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought Gauff's forehand until the very end, like you mentioned, was pretty. That wasn't great, but like it wasn't like we've seen it at the WTA finals last season.
Yeah.
I thought it was fine. And she defended so well. Kenin just, you could see in her face, in her eyes, I'm not losing this, that Grand Slam champion mentality. You could feel the Muguruza match at the Australian Open a few years ago, all that experience in these big matches against hardened competitors really shined in that moment. And I thought that she protected her serve pretty well too.
She has a deceptively good serve, actually.
I was honestly a little surprised at how easily Svitolina, took care of her in the third round. I thought she surprised me in the second round. I thought Mertens would win. She surprised me. She honestly, every match after Venus, I thought she was going to lose until the semifinal when I thought she was going to win, and then she ended up losing.
Yeah, especially even the Azarenka match. I think she was down a set and a break. And she gets it back all the way to 3-love in the third. And now I'm thinking, okay, this could be her time to get her first win over Vika. And then Azarenka comes all the way back. And then we have this phenomenal third set tiebreak, one of the best matches of the tournament, no doubt. And this was going on simultaneously with the Bencic and Swiatek match. So those two matches happening at the same time was such a win, I thought, for the tournament. But just the offensive repertoire that I've seen since Svitolina, especially going so big on the forehand and still going so big on the second serve return and that backhand down the line, all these shots when they're firing in combination with each other, and then you just add her whole will and her whole, just her new outlook of she doesn't have that much to lose anymore. In fact, only to gain. Her comeback is so impressive to where now she's headed basically back to the top 10. She's already in the top 30 in the rankings again, which is kind of insane. She was outside the top 1,300. When she played her first match in Charleston against Putintseva.
Yeah, I think she played an ITF in Portugal. It was now here she is, Grand Slam semifinal. And now she's going to her best surface, right? I think her best surface is hardcore. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. Maybe she has made a Wimbledon semi in the past as well. I personally think she's most, at least maybe that she's most comfortable on hard court. So it'll be really interesting to see how she does this summer, how she does at the U.S. Open. And I think that, you know, no one wants to see her in the draw. And you mentioned, and you talked earlier about, I want to just touch on this because you talked about it. It is true that the fact that Azarenka dominated the head-to-head and to have the mental strength and willpower to pull that out from a set and a breakdown, very, very impressive. And you can tell. And I know that this sounds cliche, and like it almost feels like she is playing for something bigger than herself.
Yeah, for sure. And then I think it's just like the combination of like, yeah, I mean, like she had Sky like in October of last year, and now she has it like 9 months later. I mean, the turnaround is very impressive. And then of course everything that, you know, is happening in Ukraine, and obviously she feels like she's playing every time for her country, and so the willpower to like, yeah, just get all the way back here so quickly. Yeah, I just found the whole story very compelling, and that's why I was rooting out of interest for the whole story. I was rooting for a, you know, Jabeur versus Svitolina final. I think many people were.
Yeah. I think that for me, it would have, well, I don't want to get into it. Politically, it would have been interesting to see Sabalenka, Svitolina in the Wimbledon.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah.
But, you know, another one who should be kicking her, who's definitely kicking herself, is Sabalenka. No, we talked about Pegula kicking herself. But I, you know, given Sabalenka's serve, the fact that she was a break, I think it was even like up to 4-3. It was at 4-3.
Yeah, 4-2, I think, yeah.
And like, I personally think, given what we saw from Sabalenka all tournament and the fact that she had, I think she was playing for number one in that match. So maybe there were some nerves there.
Yeah, and she definitely has a semifinal hurdle right now because she's lost 5 semifinals. She's won one, and the one that she won was against Lynette. So, and then amongst the 5 that she's won, I would say like the Pliskova one, that wasn't really in her control because that was just, you know, 2 breaks in the second and third. And
right.
So that one, and that was her first one. So I'm like, okay. But the one against Layla, I think that was more down to her losing it than Fernandez winning it.
Yeah. Do you remember 100%. That? 100%.
And then of course, then you have the following year against Swiatek. I will say Swiatek made kind of life difficult for her. She shrunk the court a little bit and her defense made it tough to hit through, but still, she lost 16 of the next 20 points, right? from 4-2 up. So again, she's had leads in all of these. And then obviously the most surprising of all was against Vukova, where, you know, she had 2-5, 30-40. I mean, the match was basically done. She had a major collapse.
It was also like, I believe she was injured, right?
Vukova was like towards the end. And she was really there for the taking until about 5-all when, you know, she saw the opportunity. And then, yeah, like beautiful winner to convert and then served it out. But Sabalenka lost like most of the points after 5-2 when it was again one of those where like she would have played Iga and then the winner of that becomes number one, and then same thing with this one.
I think Sabalenka's level would have beaten Vondrousova too, and so for me it was just and you know Sabalenka is, I don't think of her as someone that is losing, you know, these big matches, but she, when you really think about it, like you just like laid it out for me, like, oh my God, that is a little, that's more than I thought it would be. And yeah, I mean, even like the US Open last year, I didn't think Swiatek played near her best in that whole tournament. I thought that match was there for the taking, and she botched it. Yeah, you mentioned the French Open, you mentioned this one. You said it perfectly. She's had leads in all these matches. And so
that's the thing. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. And it's,
I don't know why. I don't know why she, you know, and it might be like, you know, maybe she, I don't know why she keeps doing it. But it's just, it's sad to see her like peak level and then just see how she can just implode.
Yeah, and this was one of those where, like, you know, she could have gathered herself in the third, but I think Jabeur, the way she dissected these power players this tournament, and the way she kind of, with her compact stroke production and just how flat she hits and just how good she is at redirecting, it almost helped her that she played a lot of these power players. She could just absorb all of their pace and kind of just go down the line pretty big. Her backhand was doing some decent damage, and she kind of, at the same time, Sabalenka in that 4-3 game had three game points, and she had sitters on a couple of plus one forehands that she wasn't missing all match. So if she picks those, then she's up 5-3, and it's probably unlikely, because for most of the match, her power was just so overwhelming, even for Jabeur with her hand skills, to really do something with and neutralize. So it's kind of twofold.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, in the past, Jabeur, you know, is, I believe, at least coming into the match, was 1-4 against Kvitova. She struggled at times when she doesn't have a ton of time, but she really absorbed power really well in this match. I watched a lot of that Kvitova match, and just the way that she was, it looked so effortless and graceful with her just placing the ball like it was on a string, and her variety out of nowhere, like where she would just throw in like an amazing angle or a drop shot out of nowhere, and Kvitova would just not be able to react in time. Now, of course, you know, Sabalenka did hit herself out of the match a little bit. So did Kvitova, you know, and so did Rybakina to an extent. But at the same time, you got to give Jabeur credit in the sense that she made the court look small to these players. She forced them to hit outside of their comfort zone. And come on, you're beating Sabalenka, Kvitova, and Rybakina in a row at Wimbledon.
It doesn't get much better than that. I don't think we'll see a better run to the final like this year or next year. Like, it's insane.
I likened it to like the Lisicki Bartoli final in 2013, just in the sense that like Lisicki had beaten it totally informed Radwanska. She had beaten Serena. She had really, she had taken down some of the bigger name type of players before the final, and then just kind of in the final let her nerves get the better of her and choked it a little bit. And then with Bartoli taking the title. And so that's what I thought about when I was thinking about the match. But I also don't want to take anything away from Vondrousova. She still had to hold her nerves. She still had to play solid tennis. She wasn't great, but she didn't need to be. And she knew what it took to win. And hopefully this is a springboard for the rest of the season, which should be on surfaces that I think are more, you know, hard courts. I think are more favorable to her than grass. We saw what she did at the Olympics a couple of years ago. I think that she can. Do you see, are you like, because we've talked a lot about, or not we, but like I've seen on Twitter a lot about the new big three. Swiatek, Rybakina, Sabalenka. Do you see Vondrousova as a worthy, like, do you see her now in the mix with those three, or do you need to see more?
Well, I think it's kind of like those three, and then I heard someone say, like, and the Czech Republic, which I guess is kind of true as well, because you have, like, you know, Krejcikova won Dubai, Kvitova with her Berlin and Miami titles, and then Vondrousova now with this, and of course, Muchova at the French. There's just so much depth in Czech tennis that I feel like one of those is right there along with Jabeur as well. But I just think, I mean, this was still, I mean, still the big three, like here, I mean, of 2023, I guess, they still got to the quarters, all four of them, even like all the top four seeds still got to the quarters. But I am still a little surprised that none of them didn't actually end up winning. I thought one of those three would actually end up winning it in the end. But I don't know. Maybe I just need to see a couple more tournaments in the hardcore swing, like maybe Cincinnati and Canada, before I can say, like, okay, yeah, I mean, because in a way, like, narratively, to those who don't really follow tennis, like, not for us, because, like, we've known Vondrousova for many years, but, like, to them, it's, like, back to the narrative of, like, oh, anyone in the top 50 can now win a slam. Whereas before this, it was, like, okay, we have a solid group tier of these three guys, and if Jabeur had won, for example, you know, then you could have...
He would have been right there with...
Yeah, you could have made a case for a big four at that point, because you're, like, okay, yeah, three of the last five major finals, she's won. And she missed a lot of time this year due to injury, right? Like, she didn't play the Middle East because she had a knee surgery. Right. She had the calf thing. She still won Charleston. And now she's in the final year, and she's basically back to number six. And had she won, she would have been firmly number four in the race. Number four and number three in the rankings, overtaking Rybakina. So I felt like narratively, and then, of course, like, you know, the trailblazer that she is and everything, like, that would have really been something more of that narrative of, like, the consistency at the very top. Whereas now we're kind of left wondering, like, where does Wondrusova go from here? Because it's she's had a very inexplicable type of career so far. And I know that injuries have played a huge part in that. Obviously, she was in a cast literally this time last year at Wimbledon. And
crazy.
Like, I think she had even had another wrist injury at the end of 2019, if I remember correctly, with her left wrist. So a lot of, like this was her first, this was the first unseeded player to win in the Open era. But it, at the same time, it's like, there's pedigree, obviously, like with the silver medal and the Roland Garros final. But
if she had won on clay, I think we'd all be like, oh, well, of course. Like, I mean, she was due to, yeah, she was going to win in one of these years. You know, if she won Roland Garros, then she was a finalist in 2019. Her game looks like it should be good on clay versus, you know, quicker surface. The higher bounce suits her game. But I think it does feed into the random narrative because it happened on grass. Even in hard courts, you can make the argument, yeah. But just because it's grass and she was just so poor going into it, it does feed into that narrative. I think we're on the same page. And I totally agree with you that Jabeur, if she had won the match, is right there with Rybakina and Sabalenka. When she beat Bolter 6-1, 6-1, when she basically didn't drop serve for like three straight after the first service game of the tournament against Shelby Rogers. She basically didn't drop serve for like.
I was a little concerned for Rybakina, and I must say, going into that quarterfinal, I just felt like Jabeur was the underdog. Mm-hmm. Because as great as Rybakina was last year, like Jabeur's level really kind of dipped in the last two sets where like she really tightened up and felt the weight of the moment.
Right.
And then I also thought, like, because of the Haddad Meyer retirement, I thought that, and then because like Bolter third round, like not really a threat, I thought that she wasn't maybe just ready for a challenge like that right away, especially because she had the virus also before, like, you know, the French, and then her loss was to Donna Vekic, which I guess like aged well in the end in Berlin.
Definitely.
She'd been missing momentum for a while, even like the Rome title. I mean, she won like three of those six matches were because of retirement. So like, I didn't really know like
ever really was playing at all. Yeah.
Until like basically since Miami, like I didn't know how to gauge her level basically, even though she got to the quarters.
Yeah. I was kind of in the boat before the tournament of like, she's going to lose early. And then she started like mowing people down. And then I'm like, oh my God, she could win this thing. But I think that probably the lack of match play, you know, she just seemed like she ran out of gas after that first set against Jabeur. And whereas,
right.
And I do also
kind of switch to the sets because I felt like Jabeur should have won the first one.
Yeah.
Rybakina should have won the second.
And then after that, she was out of gas.
Yeah.
And I totally think that, I think that Jabeur, you mentioned it, does much better as an underdog. I completely agree. I think that she doesn't feel the pressure, whereas she came into last year's Wimbledon final as the favorite, and now this year's as the favorite, and she's lost them both. U.S. Open final, she should have won the U.S. Open final.
She should have won the second set.
She should have won it, and I think if she won the second, she had the momentum, and then we would have seen what would have happened. I from the Pagula Swiatek match at the U.S. Open last year, I just did not think Iga played that well, and I thought
she didn't. She was far below her best in that U.S. Open.
And I ended up winning it. I know I keep saying it too, but like it's true. It's like, oh man, Owens, like you had three winnable ones, and you're such a likable person. It just kills me that she's not, she hasn't.
It was just so this thing to see her, like, you know, she's 2-love, 40-15 up. And I'm like, she's definitely nervous. Wondrusova is not playing that well. And if she holds for 3-love, I think that kind of changes the whole match because, like, she just made three straight errors from game point up to get it back to 2-1. And then she's up 3-1. And I'm thinking, like, she never really consolidated those leads. And every single time it was unforced errors and tightening of her shots. And you could see the footboard go away. Like, she just wasn't moving in between points. Her second serve was much slower than it had been all tournament. Even her first serve, she was so predictable, always going to the Wondrusova backhand. And
yeah,
Wondrusova can actually hurt you on the backhand wing when she has time. And it's like, she was hitting strong returns and she was just hitting with a lot of depth and just asking the question of Jabeur. And Jabeur wasn't putting enough balls in play. And, you know, had she done that, she could have at least made Mackie earn it a little bit more. But I think her mentality was just She was so wound up by the whole occasion and the whole way of like carrying like Tunisia and the Arab world and just all of that, like I think just really got to her in the end. And it was kind of unfortunate too, because like before the match, she showed up, I think, in all black on center court. And I read that somewhere on Twitter that she showed up in all black and was training on center court. And then her practice was delayed like 8 minutes into it. And she was asked to change in all white. And I
hate all that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, but just like the fact that like no one on her team or like she like wasn't like she wasn't aware of it or like she just completely missed that. Like it was.
I wonder.
It is not a great way to like start the day in terms of like before the biggest match of your life. And then I think she showed up really early to the court, like eight minutes before the match actually started. And it's just her head just seemed all scrambled the whole match.
Yeah. Although like in the first two games, like you were saying, the first 2.5 games, like she came out on fire. And so that's what made it even more weird, where that's why I think the final as a whole for me was a bit of a letdown, just in the sense that it didn't feel to me like Vondrousova just flat out beat Pegula in that third set. She just took matters into her own hands and played the offensive tennis that she needed to do to win. It just felt to me like Jabeur was giving it away with the errors and this bad decision-making. And yeah, it looked like she had rocks in her, like, what's it, bricks on her shoes or whatever the saying, rocks in her shoes. Footwork wasn't there. It just felt like the decision-making, like, which was so great against Kvitova, Rybakina, Sabalenka, just wasn't there. And it felt like it was her, it felt like she had never played in a major final before.
It felt like she lost it, even though it was her third. It felt like she'd never been there.
Yeah.
Like,
and it just makes me wonder if she can play so well and she tightens up like this and now three straight, because I thought that she played tight at the U.S. Open as well. I thought she played very tight when she got the lead against Rybakina in the last year. Is she ever going to win a major, or will her nerves just never allow her to do so? And I don't like blame her.
I think that's why also she was nervous, because she's about to be, 29? This is her prime right now. And I don't know how many more chances she's going to get. And this is her best surface, because let's be honest, do we really see her winning a French Open?
Against Swiatek on clay.
And then U.S. Open, like, I don't know if she's going to go back and defend her final. There's just a lot of contenders there again. How are you going to go through all these power players and get in that position again? And then Australia, she never seems to do that well. She has one quarterfinal, but it's not one that you would like expect her to get to the final and have another chance. And she could, but it's just grass is like the one. Like, that is the court that suits her, Wimbledon. So,
yeah, I think that, like, and it's also just the fact that, like, you know, women, tennis can be, you know, pretty deep. You have your Kvitovas, you have your Vondrousovas now. You have your, are you really gonna be able to go through Rybakina, Sabalenka, you know, again? You know, I just don't know if like she's the sinking feeling in my stomach that she's lost her chance of ever winning one. And if she doesn't, she still had a great career, but it doesn't. You know, she wanted. I'm sure she'll look back and with regrets.
Yeah, I think. I think she was saying that Kim Clijsters came up to her in the locker room and told her that she lost her first four major finals. I mean, like, there are, like, cases of this. Like, who else? I think hers could be, like, a Yana Nabokova.
Andy Murray lost a lot, right?
Yeah, he lost his first.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Or Lendl also lost his first four, but
like, you know, you just never know. Like, it's a 108 person draw, right? You have injuries, she has injury history. You know, it's, I was gonna say, well, she did come through a really tough draw here, but you can't rely on that. And I just hope there's not a hangover for the rest of the season. Like, I hope she doesn't,
because this could be one of those matches that sets you back for a long time. This, you don't like regroup quickly, and like, it's a really tough one. Like she said, it's the toughest loss of her career. I would agree.
Yeah, because like Rybakina, like Rundrusova doesn't have Rybakina's big serve. She does. She's not Iga Swiatek, right? Like at the end of the day, she was playing someone that had a losing record on grass coming into the tournament, and she got a gift in the final and she blew it. And so that's,
she started to get that momentum back in the second set. You know, what was up 1-love, 40-love, and then she gets it all the way up to 3-1. I feel like the patch from like 2-4 to then losing those next five games in a row, like that really cost her.
Yeah. And she just gave it away over there. Like it wasn't, and it's disappointing, but at the end of the day, I don't want any of the like listeners to feel like we're like, totally discrediting Vondrousova. She played well, but I think objectively we can say that Jabeur played a higher level. I mean, I'll speak for myself. I think that Jabeur played a noticeably higher level throughout the tournament, maybe with the end of the Pagula match aside for Vondrousova. And so, you know, for me, it's a little sad that the Jabeur's level was not rewarded with a major final. I mean, with a major title.
Yeah. I kind of felt the same. I mean, like Vondrousova played she played the perfect match in terms of like understanding the moment. And I mean, she, for example, made fewer unforced errors by a lot. Like I think it was 13, which is pretty okay for a 2-set match like this. And Jabeur made 31, and it's just, I mean, she just remained solid. That's all I can say, is she just kept asking the right questions. And so in that sense, she did exactly what she had to do.
And it wasn't like it was 7-6, 7-6. She was making an error and a half per game, an unforced error and a half per game. That's a lot. And it's, you know, that's unforced, right? Not the forced, you know, the ones that are categorized as forced. And so, yeah, you're totally right. It's, you know, she kind of hit herself out the match. But at the same time, you know, Vondrousova, she did what she needed to do. She stayed solid and she let an imploding opponent implode.
Yeah. And of course, she had beaten her at the Australian Open also in the second round and Indian Wells as well. But I kind of discounted those matches just because Jabeur was not healthy.
Yeah. And Indian Wells is a surface that suits Vondrousova's game a lot better than Jabeur's.
Yeah.
And she did win on grass in Eastbourne a couple of years ago too in straight sets. So it was, And she won and so for me, it was just a little, it was all setting up for like, you know, a Jabeur like celebration. And, you know, it's sport, right? In sport, you never know. That's why they play the game. And so, kudos to Vondrousova for coming through that one.
Yeah. And it's a great effort because now she's back in the top. She's into the top 10 for the first time. I wanted to say back, but then I remembered she never actually got there. She was 14. It was her previous.
Maybe without the injuries, she would have been there earlier, but it's well deserved.
For sure.
You know, she really took it. I thought, I was like, okay, if Shroud Tech doesn't make it from the top half, it's going to be either Vekic or Kudermetova. But somehow it could, you know, the winner came from that section. It was just neither Vekic and Kudermetova.
Man, that's two out of the three slams this year that Vekic has lost to the eventual winner, isn't it?
Because she lost to Sabalenka at the Australian, right? That Sabalenka match. Sabalenka just crushed. That was like that tournament in the warm-up tournament. I know this is a little off topic, but I just want to say that tournament in the warm-up tournament were the two best tournaments I've ever seen Sabalenka play.
Yeah, 100%. Like the way she played at the Australian Open was just the best level ever.
It was probably best. The level she played in the Australian Open was,
I think, almost half of the points that she won were from direct winners of her own. It was like 47% for the whole tournament.
Yeah. And she got her serve under control. It was really impressive.
But that's where I feel like playing, because of how clutch she was in that final against Rybakina.
Was it?
In some ways, it was an easier match for her to play at that ridiculously high level because she's playing another power player, and she's a better defender than Rybakina is, and she can react and stab, get shots back, and defend a little bit more and ask tougher questions. And when she's confident and she had gotten over the semifinal hurdle, I thought after winning Australia, like, that was done, you know, the semifinal wobbles.
I thought it was too.
But still, like, she's the best player in 2023. She's reached the semis of four majors in a row now. She's, you know, has a good chance to finish the year number one. So she's made loads of progress in the last year and a half. And, like, you could think back to January of last year where she was hitting 20-25 double faults. Australia.
Oh, yeah. I think she played Rebecca Peterson at the beginning in 2020. I guess we're in 2023, so it'd be 2022. Yeah. And I think she hit like 25 double faults. It was like the commentators where I think were even like, holy cow, what is going on here? It was really bad. So to see, you know, even if she is choking these semifinals a little bit, to see her progress from then to now is just astonishing. Truly, like, astonishing. I have her as my super early U.S. Open favorite. Who are you thinking?
I mean, probably, because if she manages just rein it in like 5% in those moments, the power is just overwhelming. It's way too much for like 99% of the tour to contend with. And here she also had one of those matches where she has like one really bad match usually in the first couple, two or three rounds. She gets through that. And last year it was Kanepi at the U.S. Open. This year it was Krejcova at this Wimbledon. But I feel like there's no reason why she can't overcome this and win more
majors. Oh, absolutely. And at the end of the day, I think she would have beaten either in the semi. Like, if she got Vondrousova or she got Svitolina, she would have probably won. Then we would have been talking about how dominant she was. But she got the player, as we were talking about before, who was probably playing the highest level during the tournament as a whole. And so, and she was still up a set and a break. And honestly, you know, she, you know, I would say 9 times out of 10, she closes that match out.
Yeah. And then of course, like, looking at Świątek a little bit, obviously, I mean, she had those three matches in Bad Homburg. It was clearly an improvement from last year in terms of a grass season. She was great when it mattered against Vekic in terms of saving those match points beforehand, got her through that second set tiebreak, and she was able to close Benčić.
Yeah, Benčić. I knew what you meant.
So that was a good result, because I felt like that was a trap match for Iga. And when she got through that, I was just, you know, I have mixed feelings about the performance in the quarterfinal, because obviously Svitolina played extraordinarily well in many occasions. And, you know, again, it was one of those matches where Świątek should have won the first set.
Yeah.
Svitolina should have won the second, but instead they kind of flipped, and Świątek was extremely clutch in that second set tiebreak from 4-1 down, winning 6 of the next 7 points and hit 4 forehand winners, and, you know, really kind of willed herself through that second set. And she had all the momentum going into the third, but I just felt like two things were a bit off. One, Iga somehow, like, the wobble at 5-3, I was not expecting that. You know, when it was 5, love 30, and then all of a sudden Svitolina wins 16 of the next 18 points, and Iga's forehand was just went gone. Like, it just went missing for about 4 games in a row, and she just went really dark on herself emotionally, and I felt like, you know, she's so hard on herself sometimes, and once that set was over, she was just furiously writing notes in her notebook, and, you know, it was just one of those where, like, she looked at a loss of what to do, and, you know, we know she's, like, not the most secure person usually most of the time on the court, and she has a lot of those doubts. And she's
done more on grass than even on, like, clay. You know, I feel like on grass, she has just not a lot of confidence in herself.
Yeah. So like, that frailty is still there, you know, and you just have to be able to play the right kind of tennis to get that out of her, especially if you're a power player. And Svitolina played like a power player a lot of the times, attacking Swiatek's second serve. I think Swiatek was 9-for-27 on second serve points, yep. But she double faulted 3
broken
times. So
6 times.
So when, yeah, broken 6 times. And when she actually broke it, she only won 6 points. So it's...
You don't see Swiatek get broken. You know, Klay is typically the more breakable surface. And, you know, you never see Swiatek get broken 6 times.
But I mean, like, sometimes I just think she's such a perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
And she's so dark on herself that things can just really go south when you're least expecting them to. And all of a sudden, like, you know, it's not like the bravado and confidence of, like, other major champions where, like, they walk on the court and they have this, like, complete and total faith and belief that they're just going to triumph every single time. Whereas with Iga, like, things can just really go south out of nowhere. And her forehand just can, you know, it can be rushed, obviously, especially on the surface. I also just don't think, although she's improved, like, she's just not that comfortable moving, especially north to south, and also just, like, defending the forehand.
But not enough,
right? Yeah. That was kind of my
takeaway. More comfortable this year than she did against, like, Cornet last year.
Yeah.
I think that it does come down to the fact that, like you mentioned, Svitolina was able to rush her in a way that, like, for instance, her second round opponent, Tsitsipas Tormo, was not able to. So whereas Tsitsipas Tormo was able to keep the ball alive, to put some spins on it, yeah, to use her backhand flight,
yeah,
to spread the court.
She played players with variety in the first week, but none who had the power to.
Right, exactly. And so
take the racket out of her hand.
She almost could play like a clay match because of the lack of power coming her way. She just bided her time until she found an opening.
Yeah, and Bench is just sort of somewhere in the between because she redirects pace really well, and she has the flat hits, and she can hit, you know, down the line, and she can she also caused Iga some trouble for sure, but she also didn't really have the offensive repertoire of some of the other power players, and she also allowed Iga to really step in and dictate on those match points, and
she also was really coming from jump. She was also coming into the tournament totally undercooked, having not played since the French Open.
I was impressed she even got to the fourth round. That was
me too. I thought she can't remember where I predicted her, but I definitely did not expect her to do as well as she did. And I think that if she had maybe gotten a grass warm up under her belt, some more match play, kind of get her fitness up to par, I think that she has the game that she could have got over the finish line against Swiatek.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see how she does in New York. She's always hanging around. And she's always,
like, US Open is her best. This is usually when she plays her best tennis.
You made the semifinals in 2019 or
something. Yeah, you know, push and rescue and, you know, nearly won that match.
Yeah. Another what if, because we saw how nervous Serena was in that final. Would Belinda could have been a major champion.
There's a lot of those what ifs, especially on the WTA with, like, the, yeah, I mean, it being best of three, like, there's just so many.
Now, here's a crazy what if is, and I know, again, this is Wimbledon, but it's back to that 2013. Sloane Stephens played Bertoli pretty damn tough. She would have got it. Lipkins in the semifinals, and then a nervous Lisicki in the final. Sloane Stephens could have been a major champion all the way back in 2013.
She could have been a major finalist or champion here because she you know, she was 6-4, 5-2 up on Vekic. That was a great match, by the way. And then Vekic came all the way back, won that. And then I think she had very little time for the to regroup for Vondrousova. And
I think that
Vondrousova played really well. But
I still think if Vekic was, if the scheduling issues had not happened, Vekic would have played her tighter. And I would have, I think probably would have won. Yeah, that's like, another one.
Yeah, like I think I had Vekic in my semis because I just felt that it felt the most comfortable.
I think I had Kudermetova. But my predictions lose so often. It's like jack it up, another loss.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like
I think had Swiatek winning the event beforehand.
Yeah, we did, and I made the same Petra Kvitova thing as well. Like next time, I'm just gonna pick her to like get to like the fourth round and stuff.
Oh, I'm not gonna get fooled by.
I usually go all or nothing on her, and it's time I took her all the way to the final, but. She just did not show up for the Jabeur match.
Yeah.
So
here's something I'll say, I think, you know, because we were talking about Jabeur, like whether or not she'll win a major. I think in terms of from here on out, I think Jabeur is more likely to win a major than Kvitova is, despite like Kvitova winning.
Yeah.
That's probably a cold take, but still.
Yeah. Because I mean, Kvitova is what, 33 now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Ons still has two or three really good years, but I don't think her window has actually closed yet. Like,
so but you also have like your Mira Andreevas coming up. You know, it's gonna get you're gonna get, you know, theoretically the Fruvitova sisters. I don't necessarily see big things for either of them, but I think that Mira Andreeva could place herself right at the top of the game within the next year.
To me, Mira Andreeva is kind of like on the men's side. If I do like a male comp, it's kind of like a Holger Rune, where I just find her defense so versatile. Like she just has a very complete game. Like nothing really stands out.
Yeah.
It's just all there. Like it's, and now she just has to like sort of package it into, like more consistent, more reliable like offense sometimes. But it's like all the ingredients are there.
Yeah, and the mental game needs some work as well.
Yeah.
Up a set and a break. Might have had a...
She throws that match out against Keys, no doubt. Like, she had a break point, I think, for 5-1. That's like
set. And blew it. This is legit. I feel like we keep talking about all these... Sabalenka, Jabeur, Amir, and Dreva. This is like the tournament of jokes, huh?
It's like the tournament of what-ifs. And yeah, I guess not backing up the really, really big wins. But that's...
Yeah.
But that's...
Even Andreeva, like you said, is up a set and a break on Svitolina. If she wins that... You know, she could have rushed Iga and like won that one, and then she's a major. You know, I would have liked her chances against. I would have thought that she could. It would have been pretty even against Vondrousova if they play. I know we can't do the what ifs, but like,
and it's like then you get to the final, and then you know it's like if you just have a nervous 35 minutes.
Yeah,
that's all it takes. Like, yeah. And then you're like, I wonder if this was best of five. And then you get into that whole can of worms, but it's...
Yeah. I think Jabeur would have been helped by best of five. Because just in terms... I mean, obviously, she lost. But, like, in terms of the nerves, I think that maybe...
That's where best of three really kills it. Because you get nervous.
Wasicki. You know, he'd almost burned Carolina Mukova in the French Open. She was down a set in a break, like, you know, that. And then, thank God, she had enough time to make the match competitive. But with best of three, I feel like, you know, for the major finals, like, there's no scheduling issues. Best of, even for the semis, like...
Yeah. I mean, we tried it for the WTA finals from 1984 to 1998.
Yeah.
And I think most of the players were, like, on board with it. Like, just the final.
Yeah.
Of the year-end championship was best of five.
I don't understand. I don't understand. And I do understand with the scheduling issues, you know, early round. But in terms of the final, like, you let these players have a chance to, like, get comfortable out there.
I agree.
And I think it's especially prevalent on grass just because of the fact of how quickly things go.
Yeah, for sure. I do also wonder how much we overrated like experience in this tournament, because it's like, I mean, reps are obviously important. Like you do need some experience. There's no doubt, but also like, you know, Vondrousova was 2-10. coming into the last season. And it's just, it's not like the old days where it's like if you're just a good tennis player, like you're a good tennis player, you know, like it's, right. like it's much more homogenized. It's much more like, especially Wimbledon is a lot slower than a lot of these lead ups. Don't you think like your Berlins and your,
especially watching like Newport today, like I felt like, oh my God, like, wow, Wimbledon seems slow compared to that.
Especially also with the roof and the rain, like it just made things even slower.
I would have loved to, you know, back in like let's say 20 years ago, you know, are Alcaraz and Djokovic as, you know, on the men's side as, you know, proficient. I don't think there's a shot 20 years ago of Andrusov as winning the Wimbledon, given how, you know, quick and low bouncing it was. But I think that I've been interested a little men's tennis talk. I don't know if they would have been as great as, whereas I feel like Federer would have maybe been fine.
Yeah, I mean, Federer kind of grew up in that whole 90s era where he was anyway playing. I mean, I think he served in body to like 50% of the time, even in 2003.
Right.
When the courts were slowed down already after that final in 2002 with Hewitt and Noel Banton.
Yeah. And so I think that the grass, you know, and I don't know if there's a solution though, because if you try to speed up the grass again, it becomes unwatchable, right? Like to the extent for someone like me, it's like, oh, another big serve, especially in the men's side.
Yeah. You don't want to see like, Anderson, Isner, like just.
I was thinking about Query semifinal run, but Cressy, Jarrett, did you see that match? It was unwatchable.
Yeah. It's just two-shot rallies, max.
Yeah, not even, like, for most of the match, it wasn't even, like, a sniff of a break point. Like, and I'm not saying that we can't have big serves, but, like, when you're going sets and sets without any sort of resistance on return, it's like, do we really want to even make it faster?
Yeah, for sure.
But I think that's more of a men's issue than a women's.
Yeah. I mean, and then you also just have like some bad bounces. You have like just, you know, a lucky shot here or there. Like usually, like some half volley pickup where, like, you know, one person just slips behind the baseline, like changing directions, or you know, you just
so Venus take a big fall. We've seen Djokovic, I believe, or Alcaraz take a big fall. We've seen I'm trying to think of
everyone.
Well, so Elise Cornet against Rybakina took a huge ball.
You had Rublev when he was diving for the match point against Bublev.
Especially in that area, well behind the baseline, where it's still, I guess, kind of moist. It really kind of dangerous. But then again, like clay is dangerous with the stupid signs at the back of the court too. Right? And I remember, I think it was in Monte Carlo, someone tripped on the sign at the back.
Yeah,
that's a totally different issue.
Yeah, for sure. But so there were like a lot of good matches kind of earlier in the week. I thought Andreescu, her second round match against Kalinina, was quite a good one.
She played better than I expected.
I watched her play Vondrousova in Berlin, and I was actually like, man, Andreescu is playing well. But Vondrousova looks like she can win a few matches. I didn't think she'd win whole thing, but I thought, you know, she certainly held her own. But
I'm trying to think if there was any like other epic encounters. We mentioned Goff, Kenin. That was a big one. I thought that Svitolina Azarenka, Svitolina Swiatek. We mentioned Swiatek Bencic.
Fernandez Garcia is always good.
Yeah,
I catch a ton of that. But
and then Garcia Bozkova was also another good one in the following round. It's like, come on, Caroline, like return expand grass at least, change your return positioning. My God, the same thing with men on the men's side in the opposite way. It's like, come on.
The one time he tried it, it was 5-3 in the third set. He goes up, stands near the baseline, but then he misses four returns in a row, and it's like, then he just goes all the way back, starts returning again, and it's just a losing combination.
Yeah, and so I don't know, on grass at least, maybe next year he'll work more on, you know, his court positioning on return. Hopefully. I mean, you can't be this good of a tennis player and be that unadaptable, right? Like,
it was stubborn. Yeah.
But then again, I'm like the king of being stubborn. So I can't really
talk about it. I also think there's a lot of other issues in that matchup. But yeah, I mean, that is one of them for sure.
Okay. I'm trying to think. Are we missing anything?
No, I mean, we mentioned Keys and Dreva. We mentioned Jabeur Andreescu, of course. That one was an interesting one because Andreescu was up 3-1 in the third. And then I felt like she played a very bad game at 4-all. So that...
And then you mentioned Keys and Dreva. Keys was, by the way, I believe it was 4-2, 40-love in the second set of... Or she was up,
against Sabalenka,
Sabalenka, and was turning that match around. If she holds in that 4-2 service game, who knows how it finishes? She had all the momentum, and so that's probably another missed opportunity for Keys in this tournament. Well, just because she is a major finalist and she's always like hanging around and. I wouldn't be. If Andrusova can win one on grass, then why?
And apparently, grass is her favorite surface, and this is the only major where she hasn't made a semi. So, if she holds her 5-2, then it's kind of a roll of a dice after that.
Yeah, and we talked a lot, someone talked about how Eastbourne semi or people go deep in Eastbourne struggle at Wimbledon.
I noticed.
I mean, maybe some slight fatigue, but I didn't notice anything like major for Madison. And Kazakhina, honestly, I didn't notice anything. Her opponent in the final, in the Eastbourne final, I didn't notice like any noticeable, nothing too major. She did take a medical timeout, I believe, against Olahide. If I'm remembering correctly, it was way back then, but I didn't feel like what I'm trying to say is I didn't feel like the Eastbourne curse ended up coming into fruition this year.
No, I don't think so.
At least on the women's side. Let's see. But yeah, I mean, is there anything else like pop in the mind?
I feel like that's kind of all the matches that we wanted to highlight.
I think I said before the tournament how I was so excited for Srivast Tormo Trevisan. I watched it. It didn't disappoint. Martina fought hard.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was expecting.
But yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess before I let you go, how about the hardcourt season? Is there any storylines or things you're looking out for specific players?
On the women's side, it feels wide open, right? Because I think Sabalenka is the favorite, but I don't, Swiatek can definitely play at hardcourts too, and Rybakina. We know that the quote big three, but at the same can play on hard, and we know that. Here's a storyline. I'm curious how Rybakina, if she can kind of get back to the form that she had early in the season, because, like you kind of mentioned earlier, I'm throwing that Rome tournament out the window. I don't think she played well in that tournament. I think she got about as lucky as you could ever get to win that. I don't think there's a shot she wins that without the three retirements, specifically the Swiatek retirement the most. I think that she did not, she's been sick at the French Open. She was sick in Berlin. She was a little undercooked at Wimbledon. So I'm curious how she bounces back this hardcore season. And if she, because I think that especially given how quick the U.S. Open played last season, she's absolutely a contender for that event. It's just a matter of, whether she is physically healthy and whether she can get her rally tolerance and return back.
Yeah. That's certainly a good one because I actually don't know where her level is at right now. And the hardcourt swing will tell us much, much more. For me, I'm just interested to see how some of the players who had success earlier in the year, pre-Indian Wells in March, players like Bencic and Krejcikova. I'm curious to see if this is a time where they can kind of get some of their mojo back. Same with Bohova as well, because she also She also had a bit of an injury in that third set against Niemeyer.
She just can't stay. What?
Yeah, and it's the same. And then obviously, like, where does Vondrousova go from here? And I have questions about, like, you know, Samsonova, is she going to do something big again? As
I don't see it.
Yeah, it's...
And another story is, if Sabalenka reaches the U.S. Open semifinals, does she choke? You know, how does she get over the hump again?
Yeah.
So I'm going to predict, yeah, Sabalenka to win it, the U.S. Open. But I think it's, like, pretty open. I mean, we even saw Kvitova, you know, at Miami, you know, win the tournament. So if she gets red hot, you know, she typically does not do well in New York, but Miami's not because of the humidity, but Miami's not the non-humid place either. And she ended up winning it. And so it's a pretty deep field on the women's side.
Yeah, for sure. I could probably list 15 other names, but I guess this was a good Wimbledon recap, because we kind of just hit on a hodgepodge of several different matches and topics and just kind of spoke whatever was on our mind. But that's how I like it sometimes.
Chit chat, yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit more casual and conversational, but that's certainly a good way to wrap up Wimbledon for the grass court and the grass court season on the women's side. So thank you very much, David, for joining me. And what do you have in store for us soon?
You know, there's going to be, I'm going to write it probably an article or two this week about either Budapest or Palermo on the women's side. Thank God Clay is back. Thank God. I texted my Action Network supervisor, like, it's Clay season again. And he was like, no, it's U.S. hardcore season or something like that. But to me, it's bad. We're back on the clay and I'm loving it. So I'm going to be following those. I think Newport is also just on the men's side, just a fun. Yeah, I know it's grass, but just kind of like funky it is, like with just like the courts, with the bad bounces. That Newport is the king of bad bounces. So I'll be following that. And yeah, it's just some challenger action. It's nice, you know, having a challenger in Granby, which is our time zone, versus having to wake up at like the crack of dawn for some of the matches in Europe. It's actually just in general nice having the tour come back soon to North America as well, where it better fits at least my schedule.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that and not having to wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning to watch some of these matches. But
I can't imagine you on the West Coast, man.
It's rough.
It was tough for me too. It's like my body, I'd wake up, my body would be like, go back to bed, but I'd be like, God damn it, I gotta see what's going on. Thank you so much. But thank you to you, Owen, and Andre for having me. Seriously.
Yeah, it was a blast, and it was nice to kind of go full circle from our Wimbledon preview as well. And yeah, look forward to
the US Open. I'll do that one too. No pressure, but
yeah, you're on our list for sure. So. All right. We're happy to have you on anytime.
Well, thank you so much again.
Yep. Have a good one.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.